What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. This week, our guests are Carmen Solis and Dr. Rihal Bajani. We are talking about rhabdo from a patient's perspective. So rhabdomyolysis from a patient's perspective. Carmen had it after a workout. She's going to kind of tell us the details, and we're going to walk through that story of her workout, her experience, what I learned from that. And then obviously Dr. Bajani is here as the expert to kind of school me up. And then Bubba is here just for the FaceTime, and Sean Reedy joining us live in person instead of just on Skype this time. So guys, it's a pleasure to have you. I know Bubba kind of give you a hard time, but that's just the way it goes. I'm the host, Jeremy Jackson, sitting right beside me. We've got
Liz.
All right. And then this episode is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/rhabdo, which is R-H-A-B-D-O. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/rhabdo. Dr. Bajani, do you happen to have headphones?
I do, actually.
Because I think that feedback is coming from you.
It's all his fault.
Oh, his are nice. Oh, ours are nice too, though.
Unbelievable, Carmen.
I was just kidding.
How's that?
Much better.
All right.
Okay, so Jose, you have to remember that spot so you can edit it out, right? Okay, so here we are. Carmen, we're going to start with you. Why don't you tell us about your experience? So start with just the workout.
Okay. So I had actually traveled outside of the country, and I had gone to work out at a gym. I was doing a normal workout with some trainers, and being an athlete and a coach, for one, you know, you're always pushing yourself. And so with this, I actually had to learn that there are limits. And when our kids are, you know, sometimes telling us, hey, coach, this is too heavy, or different things, you know, really listening to them when they're referring to those type of things. I honestly still don't understand how I ended up with rhabdomyolysis. I had protein that day. It was a protein that I didn't normally take. So I don't know if that had anything to do with it. And I had my normal workout. It was a gym that was actually outside. So it was a little different environment. So I'm not sure if it was, like I said, it had to do with the environment, the protein, and then also myself and not knowing my true limit as to, you know, this is enough, stop pushing, because I'm one of those people that, okay, I have more, I can do this. This is a little bit, it's supposed to be hurting right now. And so after my workout that day, I knew I would be sore the next day, because normally when you have a workout, you're normally sore the next day. But the type of sore that I was having was very different. I noticed that my arms had were very swollen. I was like, well, I know I didn't get muscle that fast and not that big, right?
Maybe it was a great workout.
Yeah, I don't, I thought I was having a great workout, right? And so when you can't see your elbows anymore, there's something wrong. And so I automatically knew, okay, the pain that I'm having, I couldn't lift my arms up very much, even though I had done an arm workout, and I knew it was going to be hard for me, because, you know, arms is one of the things that I lack a little bit of strength in. So I knew I was going to be sore, but I just didn't know, and I had never had that type of soreness. I couldn't raise my arms. Like I said, they had become so swollen that I couldn't see my elbows. So I figured, okay, I'm being a baby about it. Let's go raise your arms, Carmen. Like, you have to do your hair. And after 2 days, I was like, okay, there's something really wrong. As soon as I got back to the States, I called my doctor and I made an appointment, and I went in. She automatically, you know, she was like, well, what do you think you have? And I said, I have no idea. Do you have any idea? She's like, well, you know what? Let's go ahead and get some blood work done. And I went and got blood work, and my CKG was skyrocket. I was at exactly 13,617. And from my understanding, it is supposed to range between 29 and 143. So immediately she asked me to go and check myself into the ER. They began to give me fluids, and they did begin to tell me the high risk that I was at, because it was creatine is toxic and it can get into your bloodstream. And from there, you can have kidney failure, and then I would have to do dialysis. Thank God I didn't have to go to that severity. And even my very first day in the hospital, I was like, can I walk around, please? They're like, no, you're on bed rest. You're absolutely not doing anything. So it was very, very eye-opening. I had no idea this even existed. And when it did happen and it did occur, a light bulb definitely went off, and I definitely wanted to share it with other athletes and other people, because, you know, it is something that could possibly happen to just anybody. And so, I mean, that's my, experience with rhabdo.
And you were in the hospital for
3 days.
3 days.
Three Great. Days.
All right. So, Dr. Bajani, your take, your thoughts on the situation.
Yeah, so rhabdomyolysis is a very known phenomenon in athletes. It's something that, you know, it's only less than 10% of the time that we cannot really truly identify the etiology behind it. There are, quote unquote, three different categories to which you look at rhabdomyolysis. The first one is your traumatic or your muscular compression. That's you take a blow, a severe contusion, causes increased pressure in the compartment, causes you to have muscle breakdown, and can lead to rhabdomyolysis. That's very straightforward. We've seen this happen. Happens a lot in post-surgical cases. Can happen in an acute setting during a massive traumatic event. Typically, those athletic trainers and the staff on the sidelines will diagnose the injury and will be completely aware of the risk associated with that. That's the simple one. That's the one that everyone knows, the injury. There's a second component, which is your non-traumatic exertional rhabdomyolysis. And that's the ones that is a little harder to train. You know, usually with that, it's a combination of either A, you're doing a new regimen that you've not done before from a physical training standpoint. You know, the literature says that you should be physically untrained to be at risk. I completely disagree. I think there's a component of being physically maladapted, meaning that you could be a weightlifter per se, and the next thing you know, you try to go do a CrossFit or rowing routine that you've never done before. And that technically means you're untrained for that particular regimen. Humidity, hot conditions can do it. Heat stroke, heat exhaustion can also do it. And then sickle cell traits, the big one that we have to look out for in athletes. And, you know, we screen for that at the NCAA level. We don't screen for that at the high school level per se, but that can also lead to it. In Carmen's case, you know, she had the component of the third one, which is the non-exertional, non-traumatic rhabdomyolysis, most commonly induced by intake, things that can cause it, alcohol, opioids, central nervous system suppressants, colchicine, cholesterol-lowering drugs, and in your case, Carmen, from what I can deduce, it's the protein. A lot of these protein supplements contain a lot of excess nutrients, and we know that they're written on the bottle. They may get overlooked, or they may not even be screened. You know, some of these supplements are not FDA regulated, so you really don't know what's in there. Implicated in that, ephedra, creatine, and caffeine, large doses of caffeine, are your three biggest culprits for rhabdomyolysis. Not been proven consistently in the literature, anecdotal studies more than anything else, but that's usually what causes it. So in Carmen, your case, I mean, it could have been the combination of that protein supplement you took that day, along with the workout regimen you've never done before, right, and pushing through. You think of rhabdo as it's a really funky phenomenon. Once you start the process of the muscle breakdown, it's a logarithmic exponential acceleration. It's almost acts like pancreatitis. Once that breakdown starts happening, if you don't stop what you're doing, it's just going to continue, and it's going to go faster and faster and faster. You don't see this linear acceleration. You can see chronic rhabdo, and I hate to use that word because it's not really a medical definition, but usually when you get it, it usually is isolated to one particular area. If it continues and you have risk factors like the ones that I talked about a few minutes ago, it can accelerate to your whole body. So the care that you were given is completely appropriate. I mean, your CK came through back 13,000, which is significantly elevated. The key to it is really, like you said, it's the rest. Mm-hmm. Stop using those muscles that are affected.
Right.
You know, flushing the protein out. Creatine kinase, which is the enzyme that gets broken down, it's a very, very high molecular weight protein that can easily block up the pores in your kidney as it tries to filter out. And that's why you really push as much hydration. It's like you are having a drain that is partially clogged, and you have two options. Option number one is you can put Drano in there and try to unplug it. Or option number two is you run water in there for long periods of time at high velocity and try to just flush it out. Really can't put Drano inside the kidneys, but you can flush it out with the IV fluids, mm-hmm. and then you stop using the muscles, and eventually it just goes away.
All right, so Carmen, did you happen to have coffee that morning?
No, I'm actually not a coffee drinker, but like I can agree, and I do think it was perhaps the protein, and that's one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to share my story, because we are in a fitness epidemic where everyone is trying to be fit. And the thing is, a lot of our student athletes see these particular bodies, especially in female athletes. And so the number one thing they have to know and understand is they do need to know their limits, for one, and they do need to be careful of anything that they are going to intake, because like he said, you know, we don't know what all is in different type of proteins, and everybody's body is different, and you need to pay attention to the labels and what it has and what it says, because just because you're looking at a person that looks a certain way because they've been taking this does not mean that they're perfectly healthy. We need to understand and be educated in those things, and I think that's what, you know, my whole purpose of even sharing my story is about, being educated in what you're intaking, what you're putting in your body, because there are outcomes that you may not want to have. Excuse me.
Hey, Dr. B, just real quick, you talked about testing at the NCAA level. Aren't all births now, aren't they tested just after birth for sickle cell trait?
They are tested. It's just, and that's now standard of care, but unfortunately people don't remember it.
Sure.
And so, you know, and that's the biggest issue, is that, you know, you, unless you actually are being told, and I think we've gotten better as a society, especially in light of all the sickle cell stuff at the NCAA level coming around, and especially in certain sports, I think parents are now starting to remember if they've had kids that have sickle cell traits. So yeah, they're being tested, and that's a risk factor for it, because it because of the risk of heat exhaustion, heat stroke that can lead to rhabdo, then that's the pathway of which you get rhabdo from sickle cell trait. It's not from the trait itself, it's the dissipation of heat and the inability to tolerate heat that can lead you to rhabdo.
Right. I mean, because she's not the ethnicity that you would think is the true quote unquote sickle cell individual, you know, for that. But what was the temperature when you said you were working out outside? Do you remember? Mm-hmm. Was it hot, or was it?
It's in a tropical area, so I want to say it was maybe in the 80s, but it is a tropical area.
So it was Houston. You were working out in Houston somewhere else then, basically.
Basically, yes.
No,
so
was during
the question I have to ask, was it humid at all?
It was not humid. It was not humid. Okay. There was no humidity there.
The one thing that I see and I run into, and I've seen in a lot of cases like this, is somebody, was it where you know, obviously you were at a high level athlete. Had you kind of come off of that and, you know, hadn't worked out as hard recently and hadn't, you know, I hadn't pushed myself, or I haven't done something like that in a month or a couple months or things like that. It was that kind of the case where where you were at? You had been pushing yourself pretty high.
Yes.
Really?
So that's why I was really just in shock, because there was not a change in my routine. Now, was I doing something a little bit, like, did I push myself a little bit more that day? Yes, but I was not to where I was out of the gym and not doing anything, and I just happened to, oh, let's go to the gym today and, you know, work out really, really hard. No, it was part of my routine, just, I guess, in a different area with different substance that I decided to take that day, I guess.
A lot of times that's...
So let me ask. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm going to interject and come in. Mm-hmm. Where were you when you did the workouts? What part of the world were you in?
I was in El Salvador.
Okay. Altitude compared to Houston.
I'm not exactly sure.
I'll Google it and get back to you.
Keep okay. And then the last question I have to ask is, how long after your landing, was it the same day that you
it
traveled?
Was, or was see, it a... And that's one of the questions that my younger brother had asked. He's like, well, you went and worked out the same day that you arrived? I said, yes. So because I mean, it was, like I said, it was common. I was used to, I was in that moment in the particular time where I was working out every day. I was okay. And I can honestly say that after rhabdo, I've kind of taken a little step back, just because I'm a little bit more conscious of what I'm doing.
So, Jeremy, as you Google it, if I remember correctly, El Salvador is a significant altitude difference compared to Houston. So the barometric pressures of the flight itself, along with the oxygen levels as a result of the travel, long travel, we're talking probably about 4 to 6 hour flight. Am I correct, Carmen?
I want to say maybe 4 hours. Yes, that's correct.
Yeah. And so that could have put a role in this. And I agree with you, Sean. I think, you know, you usually see the physical training changes as a result of this. And Carmen, doesn't sound like you did. So question now really becomes, Did you have the perfect storm of badness? Did you have the altitude changes? Did you have the dehydration from the plane ride? Did you have the barometric pressure changes? Did you have a protein that has, you know, some sort of ephedrine or creatine in it that may have not been tested for? And were you actually physically, you know, healthy enough at that temporary stage to do it? So, you know, did you have alcohol the night before? Did you have alcohol on the plane? That all plays a role in all this.
No, I didn't.
So it is the perfect storm.
No, I didn't.
So it says Houston is about 80 feet of elevation, and then it says El Salvador is about 2,200 feet roughly of elevation. So
it's a significant difference. It's enough of a difference to make you wonder.
Right.
All right. So Carmen texts me and said, "Hey, my arms are swollen. What's going on?" And so I was like, "Well, you know, have you been sick? Because like, what's been happening?" And I said, "And asking the same questions, are you sore or are you swollen?" And she's like, "I'm swollen." And of course that. As being a husband, I said, "Well, are you pregnant? Because you know that causes swelling in different areas." Just as a hey, let's just check and make sure kind of thing. And then after that, I was like, "Well, maybe you should go get it checked out." And so I said, I don't know that it's like an emergency, but again, this was all over a text message conversation. Mm-hmm. So help me to better evaluate next time if Carmen goes to El Salvador, comes back and is swollen arms.
I don't know that she's going back, number one. But, or she does, she's not working out. She's going to come back looking like me.
Yeah. So, Bubba, I ask you first. I mean, you know, you see this. You'll see this on the sidelines. I mean, I would get your input on your side before I put my input in on this particular matter.
I think, you know, number one, yeah, it's hard to give a good answer via text message. I think the problem is it an emergency? I would say if she's functioned with it for 3 days, your gut feeling is no, it's not an emergency without being able to look at them or evaluate them. And I think the right thing was done. Go get it looked at. You know, I guess you give a whole new – you're the upper extremity version of a cankle now with your arms. I mean,
yeah.
With, you know.
They were bad.
just real quick, though, Dr. B., if she would have done this same workout in a gym in an air-conditioned environment, does that change the equation at all?
Without knowing what was in that protein supplement, I couldn't even answer that question. So if I had some evidence of what was in that protein supplement, yeah, I mean, in theory, the air-conditioned, cold, more construction environment would have reduced the incidence of this.
May have still had
but
it.
That's still hypothetical. Right. Yeah, it still could have happened. And, you know, I've had a few cases where that particular environment was, in fact, a situation where this person got rhabdo. And but then, of course, at that point, they were taking creatine, excess amount of creatine, and that's what actually led them into it. So, Jeremy, to answer your question, it's actually quite, you did everything that I expected you to do. I mean, your arm's swollen. It's been a couple of days. The things that kind of make you worry. So in Carmen's case, leg swelling, not bad, right? You hear leg swelling 2-3 days, whatnot. You start thinking, okay, you know what? Maybe you traveled. You know, maybe you're immobile from the flight after workout, so and so. Yes, there's a lot of things. But you also come to the mind the same thing of blood clot. You know, the blood clot can obviously happen after a prolonged plane ride and with swelling. Well, guess what? It can also happen in the upper extremity. So the one piece of the puzzle that I would have probably asked Carmen if you had texted me or telling me that story would have been like, you know, how, A, are you sore? And B, you know, and I hate to say this over the air, but how did your urine look? I mean, was it dark? Was it red, orange? Was it, you know, clear? Because those two questions would have probably pointed you right to her rhabdo immediately. So Carmen, do you remember when you had it, that, you know, that first?
Yes, I actually do. And it was significantly darker than normal. And I know, just from my understanding, not necessarily medical terms, but whenever you are hydrated correctly, urine is normally lighter. So I can honestly say that I do remember that being one of those things that I did observe and I did know. And I think that's also something you have to pay attention to when things are happening or occurring like that. I mean, you have to watch and look at everything. And that's one of the things that I did. I was like, oh my God, my arms are so swollen. You know, I can't see my elbows. I can't raise my arms. Okay, what does my urine look like? You know, so those are all things that I think you have to definitely, you know, keep in mind and write down and know, so that way, whenever you are asking questions, you can answer those questions.
And so, yeah, so and I agree with that 100%. The one thing I'd add to that is, you know, we always talk about the urine chart. You know, if it's a clear, light yellow, it typically means you're hydrated well. Mm-hmm. The darker the yellow gets, it typically means you're dehydrated. But, you know, in rhabdo, it's very specific. It almost becomes muddy. Orange can be also look like it's bloody, dark brown mud. That's the key giveaway. That's actually your quickest way of understanding it's rhabdo, because it's not hemoglobin, which is blood cells coming out. It's myoglobin, which is funny, because when you get the urine test done for rhabdo, you're going to test positive for blood, but you're not going to show any red blood cells on your urine. And that's your giveaway that you're spilling myoglobin, which tells you that you're probably in rhabdo.
That's a big thing that we look at when we send a guy home. Let's say, you know, you have in summer training and stuff like that, or in spring training, you get guys that start to cramp. You get guys that start to have those, hey, you know, I just really, that workout just took it out of me. You know, maybe they didn't sleep, maybe they didn't, whatever. It could be a host of different things in a college athlete. But, you know, those are the things that we a lot of times educate them on, is check out with your, with what your urine is. Check out if it starts to get dark on you. If hey, you know, you get home and all of a sudden you're peeing and you're used to having that pretty hydrated, because we're obviously pushing hydration in the summertime and in any time of our training. That's what we're looking for. We're also looking for that full body soreness. Hey, think about this. Are you sorer than you normally are? Most of our guys are, you know, they're used to training. They're used to being an athlete. They're used to, hey, I know what it feels like when I go and get out of a workout. All right. If you're sorer than you typically are, if you just have that, I feel like I got hit by a bus during that workout type soreness, that's going to be different. That's a different thing. You need to talk to us, you know, because you're going to have that happen. And in athletic training, we all have those type of individuals that come to us and say, man, I'm really sore. I'm really, I don't feel good, or I cramped out during that workout or that session, and I feel really bad. So those are the things, like you said, Doc, that's some of the things that we kind of say, hey, you text me tonight if you start feeling bad, or if these are the things that pop up.
And I agree with that 100%. The one thing I would add on to that, just remember, in Carmen, your case, it was only in one elbow, and you know, more
it was both. It was both.
It was both elbows, yeah, but it was in the elbows, right? It wasn't in the legs or anywhere else. Arms, so you had to. So I would add on the caveat. It's unusual soreness in an area of the body that you typically would not have felt from that workout. And that's, you know, so Sean, I add that piece on, because a lot of times the whole body soreness is your typical rhabdo. In athletes, I tend to believe that it's not typical by any means. It's always, you know, isolated to one or two areas of the body. So adding that with the urine, that's your giveaway. And that's a piece you have to look carefully for, because in Texas, we've got the nasty summer conditions. In Texas, we've got a lot of, you know, high level athletes that want to participate and push the limits. We know this, it's there. We just have to be very careful about it. And that's the same thing I tell all my, even my recreational athletes, my CrossFitters, or my marathon runners. You know, I tell them, I said, look, if you're exhibiting any unusual soreness that is atypical for you, and you go home and that night your urine is darker than it should be, that's a timeout. Do not pass go. Let's just take a couple of days off. Hydrate yourself. Let's see how you feel the next day. If you swell up the next day, that's when I get to see you, and let's start checking those labs and make sure everything's okay.
Yes. Dr. Bajani, one of the things we always tell our athletes is that the first, when you first wake up in the morning and urinate, is your best time to check your hydration status. Does that change? Because you just talked about, did your urine color change? Does that change for the indicator, or that, think about this for rhabdo, if it changes midday or in the evening, it doesn't matter what time of the day it is, if that changes
I think it is. I think you have to be careful, and you know, the mantra is always be check the urine in the morning, it's your best hydration pattern, because of the fact your body has a chance to prepare to sleep, metabolic state changes, you get some homeostasis. So yeah, you get a pretty good indicator, but I still would tell athletes, I would check it. You know, you're going to urinate, you know, typical urinary patterns 2 to 3 times a day should be appropriate. So you should be looking at it all the time, not just looking at it, you know, in the morning. I think the morning is going to be the time where you will best notice that it's the most controlled setting. But I've seen this happen where the morning looks great. Oh, I'm great. I'm going to go for a workout, and didn't pay attention to the rest of the day. And then, of course, the rest of the day, you're dark, dark, dark. And they're like, oh, by the morning, I'm fine again, so I'm good to go. That's actually, you're putting yourself at higher risk at that point, because you're just not getting a chance to catch up. And you got to also remember the one thing in common. I want to stress this. Mm-hmm. After a workout, your creatine kinase levels, your CK levels do go up. That's mm-hmm. expected. So you cannot use that as your only lab indicator. That's like the biggest misconception, because if you have someone go work out, and Sean, you know this, you go through a typical football workout, I could do a CK within 2 hours after your workout, you're probably going to be in the 700, 800s, even the 1,000 range because of the workout itself. Is it causing you symptoms? That's a different story. That's where you have to really tie in the picture, which is why I think the urine is a much better indicator from a sensitivity standpoint.
All right, so Sean, sounds like you guys were doing education, like trying to pre-educate them, you know, saying, hey, if you're really sore, you're swollen. And so if in the high school I can't really do that, what are, again, it's better to do preventative medicine, I know. But if I'm going to deal with this in an athlete, kind of what I'm understanding you hear you guys saying is if they have unusual swelling and if they're, you got to get them to check their urine color. Is there any other treatments or tests that you guys are doing?
One of the main things that we look for it at is that, hey, I just returned from Christmas break. I just returned from that spring break. I just returned from these times where, you know, they're supposed to go work out. Most of our guys, you know, do a very good job of doing that. A lot of them also don't. You know, they get that one or two workouts in. They don't push themselves to that point. That's where, honestly, I'm not going to worry about a kid on the very last day of workouts as much as, you know, that last day of workouts, you might have a competition depending upon your strength coach or depending upon your football coach or whoever. That's where, those are not the days I'm going to be like, hey, you know, we really got to look for something there, because, you know, they're trained. They've been training really well. The days I'm looking for it is like for us, when we get back for summer, June classes are starting, and you know, the guys have been gone for a month, 2 weeks to a month, depending upon where they went, depending upon if they all left, depending upon when their finals were. And especially at Rice, we've got a lot of guys that go and do internships and stuff like that. So those are the times that I get really worried about, all right, what am I doing? What are we trying to educate these guys about? So those are the ones that I'm looking for. And that's when we also might mention it. Hey, make sure you check your hydration. Make sure you're checking your urine status. Make sure you're keeping me informed on those things. Like, those are the big times. It's, and Doc, I don't know what you would say, but I think that it's not during the like regular season we've come back, but it could be that athlete that you look at and you're saying, hey, you've been out for 6 weeks because of an MCL injury or something like that. And then they go jumping right back into it and say, hey, I'm back ready. I'm ready to rock and roll. And all of a sudden they're the ones that you're looking at and you're thinking about and or you're educating. We just do a lot of that education. And, you know, if we do have a cramper, hey, we're doing sled pushes or something like that, we'll just have that little conversation with them before they leave. Hey, make sure you go get a good meal. Hey, make sure that you go get a little bit of fluid. Put something in your body. Take your shake that you're supposed to take, something that's been tested by the NCAA. And then once you do that, and once you go, keep an eye on it, watch it, and get back to me if there's an issue. Let us know if there's an issue. I know it's different in the high school setting. All of our guys can text us, and they'll be texting us all day long, all hours of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning. And there's been some that I've actually answered about questions about, hey, I'm really sore or something like that. But that to me is the things that I would look for. And that to me is the things that I would be worried about, as well as education of your strength coaches, education of your football coaches, of your just coaches in your different, in each sport. Obviously I'm football. Education to them that, hey, you know what? Day one might not be the day to kill them. Day one might not be the day to bring them in and let's do something crazy. Going to CrossFit. I'm a CrossFit coach, so I'm going to say that I understand that there's a lot of places. There was a big article about rhabdo and CrossFit. Mm-hmm. Bringing somebody to a CrossFit and saying, all right, welcome to CrossFit. Here's the hardest workout that you can do. Most CrossFits don't do that anymore. You know, there was a time when, hey, this is the introduction to how to train. We're going to put you through Fran, and then we're going to put you through, which are all these crazy workouts. And so when you go and you do those, that crazy workout after you've not been trained for it, that's what you're looking for. And that's why I think they were having the biggest problems with it. CrossFitters were having problems with it when they were first starting and stuff like that. But that's what I'm educating my guys about. It's not anything more than just a lot of education and a lot of, you know, fluid, especially in Houston. So,
all right. So Dr. Bajani, you said flushing out the muscles with a lot of fluid. And then we're talking about, Sean just said protein shake, but we said possibly taking a protein shake could cause that. So what are we really needing to do? Because I had a conversation with Mike McKinney and he said the best thing to rehydrate after a good workout is chicken noodle soup. And so what?
Yeah, it's a loaded question. So I'll answer that loaded question with the answer that makes sense. So first, Sean, I completely agree with you. So the point where I will tell you that, you know, right at the beginning of camp for high school kids, my staff knows that if they get anyone calling for unusual muscle swelling or any dehydration or soreness, they know to get them in because that's when you see it. It's that period where either they've come off operation and they come off a break. And in the high school setting, you know, unlike college, most of the athletes are not working out during the summer or not working out during the holiday break or not working out during spring break. Or even if they had come off from an ankle sprain, they're not coming out, but they're going to go back in full speed because that's what they do. And it's just football. It's everything. So I agree with that. With regards to post-workout nutrition, I mean, there's the things that have changed. I mean, again, changed last year. The guidelines were changed last year. Brett Singer, you know, an Ironman dietitian, has changed how he handles things. But the key is this. After a workout, it used to be the first 90 minutes. Now it's about the first 4 hours. If you can get a one-to-one ratio of protein, lean whey protein, and carbs, along with some electrolytes and water in, that's your safest, best course for making sure you're preventing any kind of complication down the line with regards to rhabdo, dehydration, and delayed onset muscle soreness. Now, when I say protein, I'm very, very clear about this. It has to be a very readily digestible, clean protein without extra supplements that has to be taken with prior knowledge of tolerance. So it's not someone that you say, hey, Carmen, you know, you flew into El Salvador, and guess what? I'm just going to give you something that we take, and it should do just fine with you. Absolutely not. That's like, you know, that's like basically saying, you know what? I'm going to give you this particular food. I've never given it to you before. Going to a new place, chances are you're going to react to it. You've now gotten accustomed to it. So it's got to be clean. It's got to be very simple. I mean, there's a lot of kids, and Sean, you know, you can chime in on this a little bit more than I can. Want to take that effect, want to take that creatine, want to get that caffeine boost. We'll take anything they can to get that extra edge. It's not a good or bad thing, but I do believe that if you're going to do it, you do it after your training, not at the beginning of your training camp when you are just, you know, coming in cold as a turkey and decide, I'm just going to get myself up and running. For the high school kids, and this is where I come back to your previous question, Jeremy, how do you handle the high school kid? I think, you know, keeping wall hangouts out, what we do at the baseball stadium with the skeeters, in every stall, we have this one-page handout on urine color. It basically has all the different colors, and it shows them, hey, if you're peeing, look down, look up. If it looks like what it's not supposed to look like, walk out of that stall and let our athletic trainer know, because guess what? That's something we need to talk about. And that's the simplest, easiest way I've seen in the high school setting to just educate them on the hydration patterns.
I think one of the things that it's been, Sean brought it up and it's been talked about a little bit in other ways in this that really we need to look at. You talked about, you basically have an acclimatization period three times a year, really four. Start of football, coming back in the second semester, okay? Start of summer, and return from injury. All right. But we being high school, we're only doing it one time a year, start of school, start of football. And really that, I think that's the key. It doesn't matter what sport it is, if it's cross country, if it's track, if it's soccer or whatever, we should acclimatize. You know, yeah. We need to, if we're coming back from Christmas break, we can't go right jump into it 100%. It's like going from no training to a 5K. You know, we've got to work them back into it over a week or two period and acclimatize to what we're doing and then hit them hard again versus, you know, here we are, let's go, we're behind, we got to get to work. We're setting ourselves up to fail again. And so I think that's important. And in looking at it, the other big one was looking at it from the return to injury. We've been working, but we haven't been working at the same level of everybody else. And we can't just similar to what we talked about before we started. We can't just roll in, jump back in with everybody else and expect us to be A, able to function, and B, not have a setback along the way of some kind medically.
I mean, we have those guys. We have those guys that are will come to us and say, hey, I really don't feel like I'm in the position that I need to be to come back.
Right.
And that's the one difference that I have. You know, luckily being in a collegiate setting, you know, they get a little bit, they're a little better with that.
Right.
And they're a little more attuned to what, hey, what I need, what I'm doing, what I need to do to be in my position. But I mean, spring is the worst, like spring football. So a lot of the high schools in Texas obviously are playing spring football, and a lot of people that I know jump literally right into it, like, hey, playoff game or our last game was Tuesday, we're jumping in on Friday to our next practice. When I mean, look at the, you've got a huge separation there, because especially a lot of these high schools, I don't know, do you guys do spring football, and is it later in the spring, pretty late in the spring?
Thank God this year, last year we did not, and I'm pretty sure that they're sold on the idea of no spring football.
Basically, it starts at the end of April, 1st of May in high schools.
Well, and that's where there we go. You know, we start in January. Conditioning, weight training. You're training usually. I mean, you're still limited on your hours.
Mm-hmm. But we have them during the athletic period.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're working out every day.
They're working out, but to what extent? And to what extent maybe is it? I mean, and plus, you, I guess the one good thing with you guys is they probably are also potentially playing a different sport.
Not always.
Hopefully. Hopefully. Here at Pasadena, most of them
will
play a second
sport. Most of our athletes, I mean, we have most of them that do play. But I was just going to add, because I know you guys are talking about collegiate level and more of football, but even myself, that I coach freshman girls, coming from intermediate where perhaps there's not any weights at all, to learning how to lift weights, or, you know, learning and understanding, hey, coach, this is too much weight, and being like, okay, you know, let's take some off, and letting them build up, just like just using the bar itself. Some coaches want to push and say, no, you can do it. And this right here is a perfect example of why we need to be careful, especially whenever a kid is telling you, this is too heavy for me. I know at times, sometimes we may not believe it, but I mean, this could be a consequence of not listening to when a kid is telling you, this is too heavy for me, I'm not used to this, coming from, you know, even summer break and then starting right back in. It's a good eye opener to definitely have them progress first, just jump in it right away.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, that's kind of the irony, that is, you know, we have this pre-participation physical where these questions are in there at the UIL level, that they talk about soreness, heat-related illnesses, dehydration, and that's all important to recognize. You know, we look at the questions, we look for certain things, but it's important to listen to the kid and listen to what they can and cannot do, especially if they've never done it before, because that's going to be your gauge on risk factors. I mean, and unless you have sickle cell trait or a genetic defect, there's only two or three what we call metabolic myopathies that can potentially cause recurrent rhabdo at an athlete level. Not, and most of the time, it's preventable. It's absolutely preventable. And once you identify what caused it, you can prevent it from happening again. Rhabdo should not happen more than once unless you have an underlying genetic defect. And that's going to be important to recognize.
I think in your case, honestly, I mean, I think back at, like, I do a lot of diving. Dive training you do, you know, you have a window from your last dive that you were supposed to be in, that you can go to your next flight or you can get on a flight.
Right.
I honestly think that you go, you know, the flight, the change in elevation, there is so much difference there that probably had so much to do as well, along with potentially the protein, along with potentially whatever the supplement was.
Right.
But in my opinion, that's why when we go, Rice is going to Australia for the first game next year.
Darn the bad luck.
Right. The thing that we're going to have to do is really work towards that and work towards that change and that altitude and the change. You know, it's just like coming into camp, because we've now got off of an airplane. That's something we do anytime that we fly anywhere, is, you know, we don't go out and push them into a practice or push them into something. When we go to a bowl game, we don't go and say, hey, morning one, let's go out and just kill you guys before this bowl game or something. You've got to have that little bit of time to get used to that level, that oxygen level, that amount of, you know, it's just like going into fall camp.
Yeah, and again, I think the key piece of that is that, you know, we talked about the point where you come off the plane it's also the point when you get back on the plane to come back home, mm-hmm. you know, you need to make sure that you have to be aware of this. I mean, there are certain other conditions besides rhabdo that could potentially happen after, you know, a strong game. And, you know, this, we have certain professional sports, they just jump on planes like anything because that's what they do, but they're trained for that. At the collegiate level and even at the high school level, if you're traveling for long periods of time, the way there is just as important as the way back is for watching some of that stuff, because it could get worse even with certain barometric pressure changes. I mean, we're in high school football right now, and we got the state championship rounds going this weekend. There's going to be teams that are going to be potentially busing for 3 to 4 hours or even flying out to Dallas for these games. Guess what? The game, the way there is concerning, the way back is equally as concerning. So just be aware of that.
No, nobody's rebutting that at all.
No one's rebutting that.
I remember when I was in the JUCO setting, the junior college setting, and we were like, we would drive from Coffeyville, Kansas to Colorado Springs, Colorado, and you're renting sleeper buses. And if anybody's never got to experience a sleeper bus, which you flip the tops up so that it makes a bed at the top and it makes a bed at the bottom, and you're trying to ride on two or three of those with a bunch of collegiate football players, it's an experience that you need to have at least one time just to say you did it, because that's when you're talking about like trying to get somebody off of a field with an injury or with whatever that it might be, just like Doc was saying, that's the thing that, all right, we have a 12-hour bus trip back to Coffeyville, Kansas, or to wherever that we're going. So
yeah. Carmen, yes. Has your workout changed at all? Do you do anything different? Are you scared to push yourself now?
Yes, I am. Very much so. It was very different afterwards. Number one, the doctor said I was not going to be able to work out for a little bit over a month, just to make sure everything was okay. And when I did finally start going back, it was definitely something that was always set in my mind. Okay, am I pushing too much? Is this too much weight? Am I okay? How am I feeling during my workout? One of the major things this kidney specialist, I'm sorry, said was absolutely no supplements. Absolutely stay away from GNC, no Smoothie King, none of that at all. So, and I already did not take any type of pre-workout because I get very jittery, so I can't do pre-workout. And now I'm just kind of peanut butter is kind of what I do, I guess, afterwards. I stay away from all supplements unless I am going to actually investigate and get information on that. But yes, my workouts have definitely changed. And I pay attention to where I'm going to work out, obviously.
Okay, Dr. Bajani, Sean, thoughts on that?
I think the timeline's appropriate after a rhabdo episode. You know, you gotta remember, this is muscle breakdown. It's the fundamentals of muscle. You have less muscle mass, you're going to have muscle weakness coming back. You know, usually same 2 to 3 week timeline, make sure the CKs have come all the way back down, make sure the swelling's gone away, making sure that the pain has gone away. And then usually I tell athletes, you know, find that new one rep max for that particular muscle group. And start at 50%. You know what your old one rep max is. You know what your new one rep max is. And start working your way back. And like I said, rhabdo once, usually identifiable. In your case, I think we have enough risk factors. Rhabdo twice, different problem. So my advice to you, Carmen, would be this. One, you're going to have that stigma. You're going to have that fear. And it's important to have that, because that's going to keep you hyper aware of everything that happened. But nevertheless, I would still say, try to get your back to where you want to be. Mm-hmm. I would obviously say, you know, the supplements, we've talked about the supplements before, but, you know, stuff like isolate whey protein has never been shown to be linked with rhabdo. It's a whey protein. It's completely digestible. It's a supplement, you know, clean, digestible proteins, perfectly fine. All the other, you know, amino acids and all that stuff, yeah, probably want to stay away from. But my advice to you would be, get back to where you want to be, knowing that it's going to take you time. Right. And be aware of that. Now, like I said, if it happens again, then, you know, second time, then we start thinking about other things. We start looking for sickle cell trait, even though you're not the proper race for it. We need to look at metabolic myopathies. Those things become much more high up the list at this point, but not yet. I would say get back to where you want to be whenever you're ready to do that.
Okay. Really, in a lot of ways, if you think about it and look at it, this is no different than coming back from ACL surgery or a shoulder surgery or anything else. It's a, you know, you get back out there and go, am I going to do it again? Is it going to happen?
Right.
You know, you've gone through that. Is this the exercise that's going to give me my, you know, swollen elbows again, and am I going to go back into the hospital? I get that. I mean, that makes sense. And it's the same thing we have to overcome with our athletes coming back from surgery. You're going to be okay. And at what point, you know, do they get knocked down and get up and go, I survived that.
Right.
Okay, it'll be okay.
And I guess it also had to do with the fact that I couldn't, like, there's nothing I could really pinpoint of this is the reason why this happened. It's not like, you know, I fell and it happened, or I ran into something and it happened. It was something that happened and I couldn't see what actually truly caused it to happen. And I think that is what kind of, you know, set in my head for so long, like, okay, well, was it this, or was it that I was pushing too hard? Was it the protein? Was it, like you said, the place where I was at? What, you know, what really did it? And I think that's what caused so many questions. And for me to just, I guess, be a bit uncertain. And like I said, there's nothing I can really pinpoint and say it was exactly this that made it happen. And that's what it really comes down to.
I think your understanding of it's going to be huge now for your athletes, though, right, for that pushing, and all coaches need to understand that. And that's what we need to do as athletic trainers is push that knowledge, help spread that knowledge of that stuff. You know, pushing is to one point. I mean, are you going to run into issues? Absolutely. Just like you said, the ACL, are you going to plant and potentially tear your ACL again? Absolutely. Right. Are you going to plant and potentially tear your ACL on the other knee? Absolutely possible. Right. But
you did it a million times previously without tearing it.
Exactly. So, yeah. Not going in scared, but going in very educated, very knowledgeable about what's going on, about what the preventative things that we can do to stay away from it, educating our athletes, educating our coaches, and just keeping an eye on things. And I mean, that's what we're paid for as athletic trainers. Mm-hmm. That's part of what coaches are paid for, to obviously perform as well as to keep an eye on these student athletes as well.
Right.
Cool. All right. Any other thoughts? I know Dr. Rajani, I told him I'd let him go at one, so I want to make sure I keep my word here. Anybody else?
I know the one thing you can do, you know, we talked about the urine charts. Those should be on the UIL website. If you look under wrestling, I believe is where it's obviously most prevalent in the high school setting here in Texas, but we did the same thing. We hung them up, and there's nothing wrong. I know the girls don't want to talk about it either, but there's nothing wrong of putting those in the stalls in the locker rooms of the women's area too, because it doesn't matter if it's cross country or soccer or basketball or volleyball. If you're dehydrated, you're underperforming, and you're setting yourself up to fail somewhere.
Right.
So nothing wrong with it.
And those are some of the things that we definitely share and tell our athletes multiple times. If you're going to come and work out, please make sure you have rest. Please make sure you've been hydrated. Don't just come out here and tell me you went to sleep at 3:00 in the morning and you're showing up at 7:00 because you're not going to perform well. So just like you said, educating athletes. And I do think that this would help. And I just wanted to share my story so that other people could know and understand.
Human Kinetics also has a really good chart. That's I believe that what we use, we have posted in ours. Just another sports medicine book company. They put out a lot of different books. So
yeah, and I know that for us, Bubba and I, you know, Ironman Institute on nutritionist Brett Singer has one he's made that actually has the components of rhabdo associated with it on a chart. So if we need to, we can get those out to high schools too. And you know, it's education. And sometimes, you know, with kids, it's just exposure. If you have it in every stall, guess what? Chances are they're going to notice it. Maybe not the first, the second, or third time, but it's going to get noticed. And at that point, it's going to get stuck.
You're going to notice after they drop their phone in the toilet because they've been staring at their phone all day.
Right. Oh, yeah. That happens too.
Yeah, that happens too.
All right. Well, this is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/rhabdo. Again, links to kind of the show notes or links to things that we're talking about here will hopefully be there in the show notes. Again, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com/rhabdo. Dr. Bajani, if somebody wants to get a hold of you to find out more, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, if you guys want to contact my office, I'll give you my office phone number. It's 281-725-5868. Bubba is also a great resource. He knows how to get hold of me at 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. So please call him and let him pick in. You know, he has all the resources we have. You know, we do this as an educational piece. You know, if there's something that we need to educate, we'll get the information out there to you guys.
All right, and Dr. Bajani has been on the Sports Medicine Broadcast about 4 different times before, and I've got links to those in the show notes as well, so definitely check it out. And one of the times was specifically about rhabdo, but this, like I said, is a more personal one because this I've had a little bit of experience with it now, and now I understand what to look for, what to ask for, and things like that. So, Bubba, since Bajani kind of threw you out there, what's the best way to get a hold of you?
Call me on my cell phone. It's out there, or email me. It doesn't matter. I'm available, and I'll answer you.
Or you just go ahead and say your email there.
I will do that. Get ready to get carpal tunnel. James.Wilson@memorialherman.org. And remember, Herman has two N's in it at the end.
James.Wilson@memorialherman.org. Yep. All right, Carmen, if somebody wants some more personal experience or maybe wants to Skype you into their classroom to talk to their athletes.
Well, my email is ccsolis@pasadenaisd.org. And my cell phone number is 832-818-4292.
All right. And Mr. Sean Reedy?
str3@rice.edu. Sean Reedy ATC, or Sean Reedy _ATC on Twitter.
All right. And of course, I am Mr. Jeremy Jackson on most of the social medias, but if you listen regularly, then you probably know how to get a hold of me anyways. SportsMedicineBroadcast.com/rabdo. Great informative session. Thank you, everyone, for being here. And that is a wrap.